Genesis chapter 6. Genesis chapter 6. I want to encourage you this week to read the whole narrative. I wouldn't dare try to read it all, but I want to invite you to Genesis chapter 6. I'm going to begin reading at verse number 11. Here's what it says. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, was full of violence. And God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on the earth had corrupted their ways. And so God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I'm surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So, make yourself an ark of cypress wood, make rooms in it, and coat it with pitch inside and out. And this is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, 30 cubits high. Make a roof for it, leaving before the roof an opening 1 cubit high all around. Put a door in the side of the ark and make lower, middle, and upper decks. I'm going to stop right there. I do want to read one more verse, verse 22. Noah did everything that God had commanded. Verse 22 said, and Noah did everything God had commanded. Say it one more time. I'll go hop town on you. And Noah did every cotton picking thing that God had commanded. Amen. Dwight, here's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about a good way to minimize regret. A good way to minimize regret. Deacon Chaney, I wish I could say how to totally eliminate regret. But that wouldn't be telling the truth, because no matter who you are, how smart you are, how close you think you're walking with God, there will be times you will feel. Matter of fact, have you ever heard phrases like this? If I only knew then. Oh, you heard that one. Have you ever heard this one? I should have stayed with my first. Somebody wrote a song about this one. If I could, let me do it this way. I love this church. I love this church. Ooh, I love preaching to y'all. Yeah. My mama used to tell me sometime, I ain't got no crystal. Yeah. Bobby, because all of those statements are really statements where an individual, where we are expressing that we wish we had did something else. I'm so tempted, but I ain't going down. I'm not gonna do it. Leave me alone. Because there's a whole lot of us in so many areas of our lives where we have not just have, but some of us still are feeling, feeling the pain of regret. So how do we minimize regret? Because if it's really going to happen, it seems like if we're going to minimize regret, somehow we've got to make some decisions and have some activity in the present that is in perfect alignment with the future, so that when the future becomes the present, then we end up with the advantage. Because if we could peek around to see what's coming, then we could make some better decisions, then we would make some better decisions now. So when the future becomes the present, then we're set. But I can't look into the future. I don't know everything that's in the future, comma, but God does. So one of the ways of minimizing regret, and we're going to see this in our text and what God is doing here in Genesis chapter 6, 7, 8, 9, all of that. One way to minimize regret is to do this. Since I don't know the future, what about committing to the one who knows and controls the future? April, that's why I said I'm trying to help you minimize. Because since I don't know if I can hook up with him and be committed to him, then I don't gotta know, because if I know him, no, if he knows me, and if he loves me like the Bible says he does, he's going to help me prepare for what is to come. Ain't that really the flood story? There are some things that even God can't stand. And man ain't even got the newness wore off of them. And there's some stuff that God talks about. We see it in chapter 6 and chapter 7. There's some stuff that God absolutely can't stand. The fifth verse talks about wickedness. That's folk just doing some dirty stuff that they ain't even got to do. Wicked. It talks about not just wickedness, but it says their hearts are evil. Oh God. Hey Daryl, let me explain why he hates this so much. See, it's one thing to want to do right, and then every now and then, when you would do good, you fall. And you know the difference between right and wrong. And I woke up this morning with my mind wanting to do right. But the truth is, I've got an adversary. And my adversary, can I give y'all this one for free? Our adversary is lurking. Our adversary is alluring. And our adversary is trying to make a lust connection. Our adversary knows some things about us that we don't really like to. There's in our flesh, there's the lust of the flesh that dwells within us. And the word lust is when you translate it, here's what it really means. It's a strong desire. Have I got a witness here? And Satan, our adversary, he knows what every one of our strong desires, what they are. Matter of fact, if he was here today, I could point to every single one of us and he's got a file. Wouldn't that be a good day to miss church? And he lures us with temptations that connects with the things that we lust. And often the things that we lust is outside of the will and way of God. Back to my point, Daryl. Their hearts. Matter of fact, it's one thing to want to do good, but their hearts have gotten so bad, they don't even want to do. Don't even want to do right. Have a life. Man, that's why God loved David. When David sinned, and when he was confronted, he felt conviction. He felt godly sorrow. He was sorry for the things that he had done. But what is written in our text is that there was a time where folk ain't sorry. They're wicked, they're evil, they're violent, and they ain't sorry. Martin Luther King put it this way. He said, there's some people that are living by the 11th commandment. And the 11th commandment is thou shalt not get caught. And for some people, the only time they're sorry is that they're sorry they got caught. Which means that if they hadn't got caught, they'd still be stabbing you in the back, cutting your throat, and digging ditches. And God is sick of it. And he's sick of it. He's sick of it. Here's why he's sick of it. It's because the father don't like or appreciate children, his children, treating each other that way. He don't like it. And he reached the point where he said, I've had enough. And he has a plan, and he decides that he's going to, end of verse seven, it says, I regret, this is God speaking, I regret I made him. Y'all see that in chapter 6, end of verse 7? I regret I made him. All I went through, give them everything they need, put them in charge. Now look at them. And he says, I regret I made them. Don't move your finger, because the next word says, but. Here it is, KJ. In the midst of all of that, here's somebody, God says, but Noah found favor. Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. My. In the midst of all of that wickedness, in the midst of all of that violence, somebody was still holding on to their faith. It couldn't have been easy, but they were hanging on to their faith. God calls Noah into a relationship and gives him an assignment. I'm trying to teach you today, you can minimize regret. You can't know the future, but if you commit to the one who knows and controls the future, That's one way of minimizing regret. But when you commit to the one who knows the future, so that your actions in the present aligns with what's in the future, so when the future becomes the present, you're in perfect alignment to receive the advantage, it's going to mean you're going to have to change. Here's my second point. Change is part of the process. In order to minimize regret in your life and mine, change is part of the process. I've met some people that absolutely it would kill them to change. The Star of David, the Jewish Star of David, has 6 points. It's two triangles. One of the triangles reflects something that some things that will never change. 3 points of the triangle, you have God, humanity, and the world. And there are some things with God that will never change. Some things with humanity that will never change. Some things in the world that will never change. And your ability to minimize regret is going to mean that you're going to have to try to figure out those things that will never change. I'll get to the other one in a minute. Slow your roll. There are some things that will never change. God is not a God. He is the God. He is the only living. He's the all-knowing God. He's all powerful. That ain't gonna never change. Grandmama didn't know a lot about theology and all of that, but she knew a little something about theology. She just had to do it at her level. They would say, he holds the world. Wait a minute, not just in his hands, in the hollow. Come here, because we got to teach these children old school. Because the question then is, Pastor, what's the holler? This indentation right here in your palm, that's what they were talking about, the holler. Meaning, God don't even need one whole hand. He's so awesome, he's so God, that he can hold it all in the hollow of his hand. That ain't gonna change. Man born of a woman is but a few days full of trouble. That ain't gonna change. Born in sin, shaping in iniquity. That ain't gonna change. Only one way to the Father. That ain't gonna change. You gotta be able to distinguish between what will change and what ain't gonna change. I don't care what nobody say. God's made this whole world, and you got a earth that turns around in 24 hours. You got a moon that circles it every 29 and a half days. Then you got the earth that tries to make its sun, that's turned around on its own axis, making its way around the sun 365 days. That ain't gonna change. We might get 50 and 60 degrees at Christmas every now and then. Now that may change. But there's some other stuff that is not ever going to change. So one of the things that I got to figure out is, how do I discern what don't change? Because that's the basis. But then there's some other things that do change. For instance, there's some things that God left out of the Bible. He didn't say what time we ought to assemble ourselves together. He just says, refuse ye not the assembling of yourselves together. He really said, y'all need to get together and have church and worship. He didn't say if it ought to be at 8 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 3:30, 6 o'clock. And so as a result, when we worship can change. Where we worship can change. We had BTU. And I told the Lord, if I ever, you ever call me the pastor, since it ain't in the Bible, is Sunday at 5:15 the only time we can learn the Bible? So we can do it on Sunday, we can do it on Monday, we can do it on Tuesday night. We can do it on Wednesday at 9 o'clock. We can do it at 11. We can do it at noon. We can do it for the Baptist. We can do it for whosoever will. Let them come. You got to figure out what will change and what won't change. Back in the day, I remember our church, some people arguing about whether or not we ought to duplicate the services on 8-track. Somebody said if they want to hear the message, they need to come to church. So we had 8-track. Then we went from 8-track to cassette. Hey, you remember when the cassette came out with auto reverse? Which means you ain't got to pull it out and turn it over. It goes right to the end and turn around to the other side. We thought that was something. You don't see nobody running around with cassettes. Matter of fact, we now got CDs. But even CDs, obsolete. Few of us with old cars got a CD player. It might work if one ain't got caught in it and you can't. Hey, I was in Indianapolis the other week and ran into my cousin. I was getting some food for my mom and him, and ran into my cousin, and he had his mother-in-law and his wife, and they were going in, and we were talking, and he was introducing me to his mother-in-law, and he said some really nice things about me. He said, this is my cousin. This is one I told you about from Evansville. He sure can preach. If you ever hear him preach, you'll never forget it. He said, where you coming? When you come in Indianapolis, when you come in Indianapolis to preach again, when you come in Indianapolis to preach again, I said, well, you know, it's not, etiquette says I shouldn't invite myself. I said, I got to wait till I'm asked. And then it dawned on me, I said, oh, but if you want to hear one of our services, all you got to do, go to the website, mynadsmbc.org. Every sermon I preach is on there. All you got to do is go online. Hit pastor sermons, and you can hear everything I've been trying to preach. You ain't got to come. I ain't got to come here. You can go right online on your phone and hear every single thing. And I know what somebody said, But what about the money? And the thing, when I got in my car, I forgot to tell him, don't forget Givlify, it's on that. Because I don't have to come to church to give no more. We got people that are giving all over the country. Givlify, PayPal, all of that. Because there's some things that can change. I've been here too long. But you got to be able to discern what is changing, what can change, and how to adjust so that you have the advantage. Last illustration, and I'll move on. Bobby, in the 1920s, there was a company who made buggy whips. 1920s. They were a very profitable company. They made whips that would fit on your buggy as you were riding down the road in your horse and carriage. This was in Detroit. Down the road, there was a rumor about a guy named Henry Ford. And they said he was down there working on something. They didn't even have a name for it. They just called it a horseless carriage. Nobody really understood it, never seen anything like this before. But the idea was that you got some carriages that are pulled by horses. But this carriage that he's building don't have a horse, but it still moves. And the guy who was making the buggy whips laughed at the idea. And he said, he ignored it and kept on making real good buggy whips. And it wasn't long until the buggy whip man was out of business because he ignored what seemed to be ridiculous. But what seemed to be ridiculous became real, and he failed to make the adjustment. When last time you shopped for a buggy whip? When the last time you shopped for an automobile? Because we got to discern what is changing and what isn't. And all change ain't bad. God's getting ready to change some things. Here's my last point. I've been trying to teach you today that you can minimize regrets by committing to the one who holds and controls the future. Dr. Jordan, I've been trying to preach today to help folk understand if you're going to minimize those regrets, some changes are required. And boy, I'm so excited about the changes that you bring in our way. But here's the last one. When you do change and you have your assignment from God, here's the last one. Carry on as if your life depended on it. Oh, you ready to have some fun up in here. Noah, getting ready to be some changes around here. Let me use my sanctified imagination, Glenn. When you gonna happen? In a minute. You know a day with the Lord ain't better. And I want you to be a part of it. Let me show it to you. Let me show it to you. It's right here in the text. Verse 14, chapter 6. This is why I'm telling you, you got to do it like your life depended on it. Listen to what it says. Sister Griffin, it says, so make yourself an ark. Did you see it?
Yes, sir.
Make yourself an ark of cypress wood. One translation said gopher wood. You got to do this thing as if your life depended on it. Because it may. Remember I told you the story about all I go through in training my children for driving? I got another son right back there. He's 3 years from his license, but he can still tell you the five driving habits. Can't you? He had to wake up. Because one time I was in the passenger seat in the middle of the night on a highway we ain't never been on. And there was a car on the wrong side of the highway speeding. We're going 70. They're probably going even faster than that, coming towards each other. And my life was dependent upon the instruction and direction I had given to my child. You got to do it like your life depends on it, because it just might. I guess you know we made it. So in the assignment, here's what's so important. Don't change his plan. He tells us why he's doing it. The earth is corrupt. I'm regretted that I made him. I'm wiping the slate clean. And then he gives them the plan. He tells them, now this is the kind of wood I need you to use. And I was trying to figure out gopher, cypress wood. One of the things that I learned about cypress wood, it's light. It's light. And that have no problem with water. It's light. Then he says, and I want you to make it out of this kind of wood, and then I want you to take some pitch and this tar, and I want you to seal it inside and out. This is how big it needs to be. Let me tell you what a cubit is. A cubit typically is the length from your elbow to the tip of your finger. That's a cubit. And it ranges from 17 and a half inches to 20 inches. You do the math. And here's what you're going to discover. When he talks about so many cubits, you multiply that times 20 inches, divide that by 12, and here's what you're going to get. What you're going to get is that it's about 50 feet high, which means that you could have you could have about 12 or 13, about 14 to 15, 17. Yeah, close to 17 feet between each floor. Now, he's not suggesting that each floor be 17. He's not suggesting that, because you're going to have some tall animals and you're going to have some short ones. He didn't say if all the floors need to be the same, but he did say this: you need a lower floor, a middle floor, and an upper floor. It's all part of the plan. He says, put a roof on it, and right under the roof, put a window. NIV version says, put a window all around it, one cubit big. So it's got a skylight, if you will, on the side all around the top. Not the second floor, not the third, not the first floor, but the upper floor. The upper floor is going to have some natural sunlight. The lower floors are going to be rather a little dark. It's part of the plan. He says, put one door in the side. Now, any of us who've ever been on cruises, you would know you'd have a hissy fit if you had to wait for 2,000 people to go through one door. But here's the plan. One door in the side. It's all part of the plan. And he says, now you're going to have to bring in some food. This is important. Enough food for you. God's so smart. You're going to need enough for you to eat, and you're going to need enough for all these animals to eat. Mm-hmm. It's all part of the plan. Now, you know what most of us would do? We'd try to figure out a way to cut some corners. I used to, when I was trading some folk, cut grass and all of that, I would tell them, this is how you do it. I'd show them how to do it. And I had one brother, bless his heart. He always thought he knew a better way. He ain't had a lawnmower in his life. Ain't never owned one. They had never owned a weed eater in his life. And every time I turn around, he'd be doing it his way. And it finally reached a point where I would look at him straight in the eye and I said, now what did I say? Repeat my words. What did I say? Now, I don't have any problem with offering a suggestion. You can offer a suggestion, but we ain't always got time for suggestions. Here's the point. Suppose somebody decided, well, because I know his sons probably had some questions. Suppose somebody said, why we got to use that kind of wood? Here's what I want to tell you in leadership, because everybody's following somebody. It's a good thing to be able to say, because God said it. Why we got to seal it on the inside and the outside? Can't we just seal it on the outside? Why we got to do all of this? I don't really know, but God said it. Do we really have to have all this food? For all these animals, do we really have to have all these stalls? Because the text says, make some rooms. Because some of these things need to be separated. Why can't we just have one floor? Put them all in there. Because God said it. And if they had ever altered the plan, they didn't know what God was up to. Suppose they didn't seal it and it sprung a leak. What if they put skylights and in the second and the first floor? Then the animals would be awake. When you got animals like that, it's nice when they go to sleep. Make sure you have plenty of food for them. Because if they run out of food, you're going to start looking real good. Why the window? Why the window? So that no matter what you're going through, reminds me of Mother Minor. When the storm is over, you're still able to look up and see light to give you some hope. Do it as if your life depended on it. Why? Because it does. What we have is that because he did it God's way, there are some things he did not regret as he went through it. You missed your shout cue. Because he did it God's way. There are some things he didn't regret as he went through it. Because for 100-some years, he worked and did it God's way, so that when the future became the present, he already had everything he needed. Matter of fact, God showed him how to do it in chapter 16. Then he comes back in chapter 17. And in chapter 17, three great things happen in chapter 17. The first thing that happens in chapter 17 is that God gives a great invitation. Verse number one. King James Version, I love it. Linda, it said, and God said, come into the ark. Another wonderful thing that happened in chapter 7, verse 15, God brought the animals to him. Hey, Sherry, he didn't have to run around trying to figure out how he gonna catch a cheetah. God brought them to him. And then the best thing that happened, I told you the first verse, chapter 7, fifth verse, chapter 7, 15th verse, and then the 16th verse, the text says, after they got in, God shut them in. I told you got to do it as if your life depended on it. And when they did it God's way, God showed up again, continued with his plan, and the text says God brought them in, God brought the animals, and then the Lord shut the door. And a week later, the rains, the floods came. But it didn't matter because he was able to get through what killed everybody else. How do we minimize regrets? Stay with the plan. God has given all of us something that we're going to have to go through. If in NASCAR, modern days, we get the benefit of seeing something we never could see before when they showed the NASCAR race. Before, when we saw the NASCAR race, all we saw was the car and the driver. But because of modern technology, they got cameras and they got microphones. They've got cameras around the track and cameras in the cars, and they got a microphone so that we get the benefit of hearing and seeing the person who's driving, trying to make it in the race. But the best part is, there's somebody we can't see, but he's connected with the driver. There's this person called a spotter. And the spotter is in different locations around the track, so that he has the benefit of seeing what the driver can't see. Have I got a witness here? There may be a wreck in turn number 3, but he's just coming around turn number 1. But because he's connected to the one that he can't see, the one that he can't see loves him enough to let him know what lies ahead, so that when he gets from turn number 3 and gets back around to turn number 1, he's already prepared. Because God will be like your spotter. I tell you something else. He's like Rain-X. The other day when my son and my daughter were headed back to South Carolina, it's 600 miles. And he ain't used to driving a long way. And I didn't ask him. I just told him, pull the car to the edge of the garage, and he pulled it in. I didn't ask him, because I'm the father figure. I didn't ask him. I told him, pull the car right in, and I got out my kit, and it was already raining. And so I wiped the windows down because it was already raining. And once I dried the windows off, then I put some Rain-X on it. Now, I don't have the new kind. I got the old kind. You got to spray it on. You got to wipe it on. You got to wait till it dries. Then you got to buff it. It's some steps to this thing. But here's what I knew. It was already raining. I knew where they were trying to go. I couldn't stop the rain, but I could help them get through it. I'm trying to help somebody up in here. This is why you ought to be connected to God. This is why you ought to commit to God, because he's not going to stop the rain, but he can get you through it. Have I got a witness here? It's still raining, but because of the anointing, can God, won't he get you through it? Because he's better than a spotter. He's better than Rain-X. God, shut him in. You do know the ark ain't nothing but a picture of salvation, don't you? The Lord, God, brought those who would believe in him in the ark. And then the Lord didn't let them fool with the door. You just come through the door. Don't touch the door. Come through the door. Don't try to lock the door. Just come through the door. And once they did what they could do, he did what they couldn't do. He shut the door. Can't nobody open the door but him. Can't nobody close the door but him. And it rained. Didn't it rain? It rained. Didn't it rain? They weren't in control of nothing, but they were safe in the ark. They rocked sometimes, but they were rocking in the ark. I'm sure they stumbled sometime, but they stumbled in the ark. I know they fell sometime, but they never fell out of the ark. I'm telling you, won't he? Won't he? I don't know the future, but I'm going to commit to the one who does. I know it's going to cause some changes, but I'm going to stick with the plan, and I'm going to work like my life depended on it, because the truth is, it does. It's your life, and it's your decision. But you can minimize the regrets, because the God we serve loves you enough to help you operate in the present, so that when the future becomes the present, you will have the advantage. Put an amen.